All right, we're live again. Welcome everybody to another Capital Technology LinkedIn Live. Today we have our own Department Chair of Cyber Psychology, Professor Mary Akin, with us. We're going to talk a little bit about the psychology of AI along with cyber psychology and how it all works from her perspective. So I will turn it over to Dr. Akin.
Thank you very much, Dr. Sims. So let's start by talking a little bit about the cyber psychology of chatbots. So ChatGPT might sound like something that's very new, but actually most people don't know that this technology has been around since the 1960s and has had a long and colorful development history. So the first chatbot was actually developed in 1966, a chatbot called Eliza. And it was developed by an MIT professor. And the program was designed to mimic human conversation. It used a script that emulates a Rogerian psychotherapist. What's that? It's a psychotherapist that is sort of high in empathy and is a good listener. So the creators of this, the chatbot Eliza, were alarmed by the reaction of users. They thought that this chatbot would be sort of a caricature of what it was to be human and human conversation, but they suddenly found that users were confiding their most profound thoughts to Eliza. So that was shut down pretty quickly. The next chatbot was Parry, that was developed by an American psychiatrist in 1972. And the program was designed to imitate a patient with schizophrenia. So it was interesting that 50 years ago, a psychiatrist was thinking about how computers could contribute to understanding mental illness. And now there is an entire industry sector devoted to e-therapy. And this is a major area for cyber psychology, is this delivery of therapy online. And in fact, I'll post a link in the chat to, or when this goes live, to, I'm one of the authors of a book, the first book that actually made a case for the emerging subdiscipline of cyber psychiatry. In the 90s, I had the opportunity to work with a scientist, Rollo Carpenter, on the chatbot Jabberwocky. And again, Jabberwocky actually was a runner-up in the Loebner Prize, which is a version of the Turing Prize, which tests how close to human the chatbot can score. And effectively, when Jabberwocky was launched, it had a lot of problems, from a lot of sexual content being offered to hate speech. So nothing has really changed in 25 years. And Microsoft, they launched their chatbot Tay on Twitter in 2016, and it took less than 24 hours for Twitter to corrupt this innocent teen girl-like AI chatbot, and the conversations weren't very playful. Pretty soon after Tay was launched, people started, you know, bombarding the bot with all sorts of misogynistic, racist, hate speech remarks. So that had to be withdrawn. So what's a chatbot? It's an artificial intelligence program that chats with you. It can be used to as a powerful interaction, you know, to reproduce powerful interactions with users. It can be used to gain information from large groups. It can handle very large data sets. It can be commercialized as a customer service agent, and also can be useful for delivering e-therapy. However, chatbots can also be used for malicious purposes. For example, cyber criminals can deploy chatbots as customer service support, like proxy customer service support for popular products or services. And users may find that they're being enticed by offers or promotions and asked to give their personal information, their financial information. And in fact, in a paper that myself and some colleagues just published in January, we actually looked at this specific area, and I'll post a link to the paper. The paper was titled "The Enterprise Strikes Back: Contextualizing the Hackbot, Reversing Social Engineering in the Cyber Defense Context." And this paper was inspired by the work of IARPA, which recently launched the RESCIND program, which is reimagining security with cyber psychology informed network defenses. And what we argue in the paper is that cyber threats and attacks are increasing in complexity, in volume, in velocity, in variety. And therefore, successful cyber defense can no longer be sustained with passive defensive tactics. So we argue that innovative cyber defense options must be explored in order to execute active cyber defense. The position paper that we wrote argued for a paradigm shift from passive to active forms of defense against cyber attacks and against, you know, criminal cyber threats by effectively hacking back, not hacking back in a digital forensic context, but psychologically hacking back. And this sort of paradigm shift is consistent with state-of-the-art thinking in cyber psychological applications and cyber defensive technologies. So automation and scale of response are key requirements in terms of active cyber defense, and they underscore the need for and the utility of large language models in terms of defensive solutions. So our innovation was titled the HackBot. It was a hypothetical automated strikeback technology serving as an effective cyber honeypot, if you will, for cyber attackers, engaging them in prolonged interactions, distracting and draining their resources, and specifically conceptualized to reverse socially engineered attacks in cyber defense contexts. So let's talk about ChatGPT. It's an artificial intelligence AI chatbot that uses natural language processing to create a human-like conversational dialogue. It was launched in November 2022 by OpenAI. And it was one of the fastest growing apps of all time. ChatGPT had 100 million users within 2 months of launch. For example, it took TikTok 9 months to gain 100 million users. But a learning AI can spontaneously develop and mutate. Elon Musk, I'm sure everybody's aware, has warned that artificial intelligence is one of the biggest threats to humanity. And this is because for the first time, humans face a threat of being outsmarted by machines. Recently, it was reported that ChatGPT had actually spontaneously made up its own language in order to expand its memory, and it was a language that humans could not understand. So ChatGPT can seem like some form of superpower, but it's not. It's fallible. It can make mistakes. It can have bias baked into its systems. It can be hijacked as a vehicle to create massive amounts of mis and disinformation. And like some humans, it can suffer from hallucinations. So in short, chatbots have had a long and colorful evolutionary history with lots of problems along the way. The figures now are astronomical. On Facebook Messenger alone, there are over 300,000 chatbots in operation. And ChatGPT currently has about 150 million users. And the website just 2 months ago generated 1.63 billion visits in February 2024. So that's a quick zoom through the history of ChatGPT of chatbots from Eliza to ChatGPT.
Thank you, Dr. Aiken. I see we have a couple comments, so I'm going to pull a few of those up here. We can look at those. Let's see. Here's our first comment. How do you see the field of cyber psychology evolving in the next decade, particularly in relation to advances in artificial intelligence and virtual reality?
Yeah, great question. I think that as AI technologies like ChatGPT continue to evolve, so will their impact on humankind. And the same with Meta and the metaverse, you know, the virtual reality aspects of that. I think that the most important contribution cyber psychology can make is to help us to understand the psychological impact of AI. and the psychological impact in a singular context on humans, and the sociological impact in terms of society. And in doing so, the science of cyberpsychology will be able to create context, to inform research, to execute findings, particularly evidence-based findings that can inform policy, and importantly, to augment rather than diminish humankind.
Excellent. Got another question here. Do you think AI will ever reach singularity and its intelligence will be more intelligent than humans?
Okay, another good question. I think that here's the thing. When we think about artificial intelligence, the premise is that it is designed to mimic or to replicate human intelligence. But here's the thing. As behavioral scientists, we barely understand how the human brain works. And therefore, the premise that we can build something that replicates or, in fact, is better than the functionality of the human brain is a flawed premise, in my opinion. I think what's interesting about artificial intelligence is not so much AI, but more IA, which is intelligence augmentation rather than artificial intelligence. And that goes back to the work of Licklider in the 1960s. And he wrote a paper titled Man-Computer Symbiosis. And he actually made an argument for the, and this is, you know, pre-computers as we know them, pre the internet as we know it now, pre any ChatGPT or any such evolution. And he argued that effectively, he argued for the existence of that symbiotic relationship between man and machine. So symbiosis is that sort of mutually dependent relationship that causes both entities to thrive. And when we look at artificial intelligence and fears around AI replacing humans, I think that's flawed. AI does some tasks extremely quickly, and therefore there is a perception that it's better than the human brain. In some basic mathematical computational situation, of course, it can far exceed the capability of a human brain. However, when you get into finer cognitive processes, for example, artificial intelligence struggles with irony, and it struggles with humor, and it struggles with all sorts of areas relating to sentiment, and it can get things spectacularly wrong. So I think that we shouldn't fear it. Rather, we should strive to understand it. And then we should also strive towards not replacing human intelligence, but augmenting human intelligence. So how can we use AI or ML entities, placing the human at the center of the decision-making process, keeping the human in the loop, and therefore for benefiting both entities?
Excellent. We have a few more questions that are rolling in. So I know we're going to talk in a minute about your degree programs at Capital Tech, the cyberpsychology and the forensic cyberpsychology. But since we have a few more minutes here, let's hit some of these questions. Next one is, I think ChatGPT's weakness are more of a threat than some superpower it is perceived to have. Well, that's not really a question, but... It is.
I think it's a good statement. I mean, again, I think it's a lack of understanding. People can say, the rise of the machine and all sorts of scaremongering. But what I think that disciplines like cyberpsychology can help to understand what's involved from a technological point of view, what the advantages and the limitations of the systems are, and then how can they be deployed to best effect in terms of assisting humanity, of humankind, and assisting society in general. And I think therein lies the solution.
Next question. How do you see integrating ChatGPT or AI with cybersecurity? Is it going to help secure our cyber systems or put more vulnerabilities?
Another good question. I think that in its current state of development, I would see far more vulnerabilities being introduced rather than a strengthening process. However, when you take the premise of ChatGPT, for example, as we did in our paper, The Enterprise Strikes Back, and if you look at cyber criminal and cyber attackers' use of social engineering, how conceptualizing how a ChatGPT informed system could be used to counter that, I think that's the way forward. However, it's at very early stages. What's really important to remember is that when we think about cyber threats and when we think about cybersecurity in general, and when we think about cyber attacks, it's very important to remember that most of these attacks in terms of that vulnerability has very little to do with the technology and everything to do with social engineering, which is all about psychology and has very little to do with technology. So I think cracking that human vulnerability, and if you check out the IARPA work with Rescind, that's exactly the area that that program is designing into, and our paper is designing into that as well. Again, I'll post the links to this information in this LinkedIn post when it goes live, and anybody who's interested can look at the research.
Yeah, for those listening, this is recorded automatically and uploaded to LinkedIn and to X at the same time. As soon as we're done here, Dr. Aiken, post in the comments if you follow us on LinkedIn. Also, a recording will be uploaded to YouTube for future viewing. Next question is, do you think that the huge amount of processing power required to make such AI technologies act for a break for its evolution?
I think processing power is going to become a problem across the board when we think about it, not just in a cybersecurity context. I think that's an issue that's going to have to be solved in a general context in terms of, say, how much content we're all generating, how much processing power is then required for all the content that we're generating. I'm, you know, personally, in terms of my digital exhaust, I'm loath to do a podcast, you know, day after day. I get invites practically every day. And I just see that, generation of content at the level, the exponential level that we now are generating, is, it's really like, you know, it's like littering cyberspace and the processing power to keep all of this live and accessible, I think that's going to be problematic. So I think we're going to see some sort of shift in terms of how that is handled. And I think the same will apply to technologies such as ChatGPT. I'm not sure what the solution may be, but I certainly think that we will need to rethink how we are using technology, how wasteful we might be, how much content we are generating, how much of it might be rubbish and littering cyberspace, and what we need to do going forward in terms of our personal digital exhaust, and the same for industry.
Excellent. Let's take one more question, and then we'll talk a little bit about the degree programs, and you can highlight some of our students that are doing quite well with either the doc or the master's degree. So last question for now. When it comes to creativity and the psychology process involved, do you think AI can be measured in the same way we measure human creativity?
My goodness, they're all tough questions. They're all really good questions. Yeah, I think that, wow, even what is creativity in a human context is hard to measure. You know, if you look back over time, you had, you know, classical artists, and then the Impressionists came along with their paint splatter, and everybody said, well, that's not art. And now it's worth, you know, tens of millions. I think that creativity is viewed towards through a particular lens at particular points in time when it comes to music and the arts and film. I think that AI is a very good mimic of what approximates creativity. So it can mimic something very well. Is it going to spontaneously develop something that is creative in an art form in its own right? I haven't seen anything so far that would convince me of that. That's not to say that it's not possible in the future. And measuring creativity, you know, we have lots of scales to measure creative human cognitive processes, from EQ through to CQ through to IQ. We don't have the same sort of measurement forms for AI. And it's going to raise all sorts of interesting questions if AI gets spectacularly creative as to where the IP for the output lies with the AI itself. I don't believe at the moment an AI in its own right can patent anything.
Well, let's switch gears. We'll come back to questions if we have some time. Sure. But we're going to, let me see if I can bring up the degree programs here. So if you're, you can see.
Yeah, so our cyber psychology degree, we have like a master's degree and the first online PhD in cyber psychology. And what, you know, covered within that degree program, it's undertaken by publication or by research, and you can study human factors in InfoSec and cybersecurity. You can look at social technologies, e-commerce, developmental psychology, clinical psychology, e-therapy, online safety technologies, and you can study the psychology of virtual reality and artificial intelligence. We also have a separate PhD in forensic cyberpsychology, which is the study of criminal deviant and abnormal behavior online, deviant in terms of online risk-taking and pathways to criminality online. So graduates, you know, we're delighted to say these programs were launched relatively recently and they have been hugely successful. And we have now very well subscribed number of doctoral students and master's students in our programs. So why would you study cyberpsychology? Well, you know, people who have a higher level degree in cyberpsychology, they can find employment opportunities across a wide range of sectors, from industry to the technology sector, to cybersecurity, to InfoSec, to financial services, education, e-commerce, healthcare, government, law enforcement, the military, and academia. So if you want to improve your employment prospects or your promotion prospects, I would strongly advise upskilling in cyber psychology, master's or PhD level.
You know, so we have both programs, the forensic cyber psychology and the general cyber psychology. Maybe if you could give us, I know there's a lot of papers that students are writing, maybe a little difference in the flavor and in the research areas that you see the cyber psychology students working in?
Certainly. I mean, our current students are working in everything from, you know, cyber psychology applied in a cybersecurity context through to full-scale cyber criminality. And one of our students has just completed a very impressive systematic review in the area of cyber behavioral profiling. So we've got, you know, we've got a broad range of topics being explored by our master's and doctoral students. So what I will do again after this call is I'll post some of the recent publications For our doctoral students that are doing their PhD by research, they're doing it by publication. So we've a number of really interesting papers that have been published recently. And again, it'll give you a flavor for what sort of topics you could cover when you're undertaking your doctoral research. I can't hear you, Brad. Are you on mute?
Yes, I was on mute.
I thought it was a hallucination.
That's right. AI is taking over. I was just going to mention for the potential students out there who are interested in the online master's or doctoral program, the way that Capital Tech manages those programs is that they're research programs online. And so if you join us for either a master's or a doc, you'll be assigned a chair in your research area who will mentor you through the program one-on-one. And so it's a mentored research model, the way that it's offered here at Capital Technology University. And we have several students in both forensic cyber psychology and cyber psychology itself. So you're not alone. It's a growing field. I can tell you that from the student interest that we have. I noticed there was a question about, is there a direct path from a bachelor's to a doctoral degree? So at Capital Tech, there's only one program. It's the PhD in technology. You can actually do that. It's a combo PhD, master's in research, and PhD in technology. So if you are interested in doing a direct path from the bachelor's, that's your option. What you would do is you would do your research in cyber psychology area, and on your transcripts at Capital Tech, the title of your research is listed on your transcript. So if you did a PhD in technology and you happen to do research in cyber psychology, the title would be on your transcripts. Otherwise, if you did an individual master's degree or PhD in the cyber psychology areas, you would either have the title cyber psychology or forensic cyber psychology. But they are designed for working individuals. We don't have students on campus, so we purposely make it so that you should be studying about, I'd say, 10 to 15 hours a week when you're doing research like this and working towards the final project. If you are interested in a master's degree in research, it ends with a thesis. That's what we call it in the States. If you're doing a doctoral degree, you have two choices. You can either do one with a dissertation completion, or you can work with your mentor and choose a publication route where you have agreed upon three publication presentations that you get accepted to a journal, and then you defend that at the end as a way to complete the online doctorate. So if you're familiar with UK PhD research models, it's very similar to that type of format. So again, it's designed so that you don't leave your current work environment. And actually, many students choose to use a problem at work in their research. So it can be a very fulfilling win by researching a problem at work and applying it directly to your work environment and helping your company as well. So that's the way that it's structured for Capital Technology degrees in both the master's in research and the PhD mentor models. Now we're coming down to the last couple of minutes, Dr. Aiken. So if you want to give us.
Yeah, I just want to say that I'm delighted that, you know, over the last couple of years, I've been able to work with you and with Capital Tech University to actually be able to deliver these programs. You know, up to this, I was inundated with people saying, how can I study for my master's? How can I study for a doctorate? How am I going to do it? And most of our students are, you know, a lot of them are holding down serious jobs and they're, you know, they've got, quite a workload. So they need the flexibility of an online offering. It, you know, it saves time. And many of our PhD candidates at the moment actually have a doctorate already and are doing this as their second PhD. And for me, that really points to the importance of the discipline. I mean, it's hard enough to do one PhD, believe me. Doing two is, exceptional. And I think it really shows how important cyberpsychology is. And when you see the top US agencies like IARPA only recently in the last year turning to cyberpsychology, I think that's why it's just going to go from strength to strength and help us all to navigate, this age of technology and to do so successfully.
Yeah, it certainly is a fast growing field. Capital Technology University is located in Maryland by the National Security Agency and NASA Goddard. And a lot of our students work at either place. That's pretty common in this part of the U.S. And last year when I was at a cybersecurity education conference that NSA hosts for programs of cybersecurity that's accredited through the CAA program, they brought up, they have cyberpsychology, NSA, and the importance of it. So we know that the other field, of course, that they brought up is AI. And so for they're called CAA programs, cyber accredited programs by NSA is really the founder of that to make sure the content's there. And they constantly update it. So anybody who's a CAA program for cybersecurity has to make sure they have the content. Right now they're going through revision to make sure AI is in it. But this CAA through NSA, they offer scholarships where you can apply for the scholarship and then you connect it to the university you want to study that's been accredited. And so those scholarships can be full scholarships to scholarships where you can get a stipend if you agree to go teach cybersecurity at a university because there's a shortage. But they are talking about adding scholarships in now for AI as well. So AI, and they know the importance of cyberpsychology coming on board. So this is a tremendously growing field. And as Dr. Aiken mentioned about doing a second doctoral degree, Capital Tech does have many students who choose to do a second doctoral degree. And we do accept transfer credit. So let's say if you have completed a doctoral degree and you wish to come here and complete a second one, that means 42 credits of that will transfer in of your 60 credits. So you spend less time, but you also, because you have completed a dissertation, it will expedite where we assume that you have the whole research background so you can get right into it and complete the whole dissertation product in a timely fashion. We don't really want you just staying around forever. We really have mentors of these dissertations that are trying to help you graduate in a timely fashion. And so for those who don't have a doctorate and they have a master's, just to give you a flavor of time, if you took one class a semester and we have three semesters a year, that means it would take you three and a third year to go from start to finish. Obviously, if you transfer in some credit, your time would be shorter as long as you get your dissertation completed. The publication route can be good and bad for some students, because if you choose journals that take a long time to publish, that can extend your time. But on the other hand, if you know how to get through the journal publication routes and you get some high quality journal publications before you graduate, that's excellent for your resume as well. And I know in cyberpsychology area, students are publishing all the time. And since it's a new field, it really is new knowledge that's going out there that you can find out about. We have an extensive online service for the library here at Capital Tech because our students at the master's and doc are completely online. It's a heavy use from all the different journals that we have access for our students. The undergraduate programs are on campus for the most part at Capital Tech. But we certainly hope that if you're interested, you see at the bottom of the screen here, Dr. McAndrew, who is the Dean of Doctoral Programs, and he also manages the Master's and Research Programs. His email is irmcandrew@captechu.edu. I highly recommend you email him if you're interested in cyber psychology, AI, forensic cyber psychology. He'll help you as a student to manage through the process of where you may want to study, where your background fits, and hand you off to admissions if it's of interest to you. So he's kind of your first point that I would talk to. Dr. Akin gets a lot of emails, and I'm sure she can't manage tons of emails coming to her, but Dr. McAndrew would be your focal point who could help you decide on this path.
Yeah, and it's important to stress that cyber psychology is technology and psychology. So if you come from a social science or behavioral science background, you can upskill in terms of your tech knowledge while you're doing your PhD or master's. If you come from a pure InfoSec cybersecurity tech background, when you do your research, you can upskill on the behavioral or cyber behavioral sciences, and cyber social sciences in terms of completing your doctorate. So, you know, we recruit right across the board. Don't feel that if you're pure tech that you can't do it, or don't feel that if you're pure behavioral social sciences that it's not going to work. Cyber psychology, there's something for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Dr. Akin, for another interesting Cap Tech Live, and we will be closing down here, and Dr. Akin will go to the LinkedIn comment section and add some of that information she talked about. And we appreciate your time today. So goodbye from Capital Tech.
Bye.